The Habakkuk chapter 1. You could see Habakkuk as the story of a man, Habakkuk, who struggles with the problem of evil. And by the end of the little book, he comes to some resolution. So he starts off complaining to God that things aren't right in Judah. Things are wrong. It's awful what's going on amongst your people. And God says, okay, I will raise up against them, this is in chapter 1, I will raise up against them the Babylonians, and they're going to come and judge them. Well, Babylon, therefore, had not yet arisen. So you can assume then that Habakkuk was living maybe at the time of Jehoiakim or sometime before the Babylonians arose to power. He was living presumably at the time when Assyria was in the ascendancy. So he then sees this vision of Babylon going around, smashing up God's people. And then again, oh, the problem of evil again. Oh, God, that's not fair. That's awful. How can you let that happen? These people are evil. Oh, that's awful. And he hasn't, at that point, at the end of chapter 1, he hasn't seen any judgment upon Babylon. So he's all very het up about it. Well, he starts off in verse 2, saying that, Yahweh, how will you not save? And of course, the ultimate answer to that is Yah does save. Yahoshua, Jesus in Hebrew, Yahoshua, Yah saves. But he says, Yah, you don't save. Well, ultimately, the suffering of Jesus, the love of God in Jesus, in Yah who saves, is the ultimate answer to the problem of evil. Not that that means that we have all the answers right now, but it does mean that that is the ultimate answer, whether or not we perceive it fully. But by the end of the book, in chapter 3, Habakkuk says, I rejoice in the God of my salvation. But here at the beginning, he says, Yahweh, you're a God who doesn't save. But at the end of it, he says, even though there is no fruit on the vines, even though the promised blessings of the covenant aren't being realized in this life, yet I will rejoice in the God of my salvation. There's quite a few things that arise out of this. I think we are given the problem of evil on a sort of a global scale. Why are these people suffering? Why are these unjust people in power, etc.? I think we're given it to humble us, because there is no answer to it. Not in any religious philosophy, by the way. Not in atheism, not in Islam, not in Christianity, not in anywhere. There is no little meme, two or three sentences that are just the answer. If there were, well, we'd all be going through life repeating it, wouldn't we? But there isn't. There is no simple answer. And that is intentional, and I would say that God has structured his workings with man to include this problem of evil and to include the human struggle with that problem of evil, because it humbles us. The fact that there is the problem of evil does not mean there is no God. People say to me, oh, if there's a God, why does he allow suffering? Why is there the problem of evil? No, God's existence per se is not predicated upon whether you or I like what he does. That says nothing about his existence. That is therefore an excuse for denying, if you like, theism, denying that there is a God because you don't like what he does. That doesn't follow at all. So God is, and frankly the fool has said in his heart there is no God. God is, and that is, I think, intuitively known by everybody. And the hardest core atheists, in my experience, are people who once believed in God, or grew up to believe in God, and who are still spiritually adolescent. They are reacting against that, throwing the toys out of the pram, having a tantrum all their lives, because they can't accept his demands upon them, so they get on this thing about, oh, there is no God. Well, of course, you can never prove, in sort of Euclidean terms anyway, you can never prove God, and you certainly cannot disprove the existence of God. So, we're left then with the reality of God and the reality of the problem of evil. And that therefore means that we are challenged by that to humble ourselves. Now, faith in God, belief in God means to trust in God. That is the meaning of the Hebrew and Greek words that are translated to believe. Trust in God is, of course, fully stretched by our encounter with the problem of evil. Why? And people make up all sorts of quick get-rounds, like, oh, you know, God's going to resurrect and save everybody at the end. Well, no, the Bible doesn't say that either. Absolutely says the opposite. Well, we are left with the problem of evil, aren't we? And it is there to humble us. Because faith and humility, or trust and humility, go together. They go hand in hand. You cannot put God in the dock of human judgment. It is like an ant trying to judge a man, or far less than that, and condemn God. You cannot do that, especially when, if you have any conscience, any humility, any self-knowledge, you are aware that you are a sinner. You have not done what is right before God nor before man. And to say, oh, that's not true of me, you aren't humble, are you? You don't have that basic quality of humility. And so, therefore, we're left with this. And Habakkuk had this, as I say. He starts off complaining, as I said in chapter 1, verse 2, that you're a God who doesn't save. But at the end, he rejoices. He said, I rejoice in the God of my salvation, although there is no fruit on the vine, etc. It's as if he is saying, well, I do not get the problem of evil. I do not get the wider issue of the justice of God, but I know this. Jesus loves me, this I know. Yah saves, for the Bible tells me so. I know that I, by his grace, I who am a sinner, shall be saved. And I rejoice in that. I see the cup half full, not half empty. And these wider questions, which I cannot engage with, to my satisfaction anyway, which I do not have an answer to, well, okay. My trust in God, my personal experience of his love, leads me to trust him in all the intellectual areas where I am not getting the answers. Now, another factor, I think, to remember here, when, for example, later on in chapter 1 here, he's complaining, oh, but how are you going to allow Babylon to do this, this nation you say you're going to raise up, who come with their dragnet, so cruel and fierce and show no mercy, and it just seems to go on forever. How? That's not fair. He says, verse 17, at the end, will he continually empty his net and kill the nations without mercy? Is this going to just keep going on? It's not fair. Yeah, because he hasn't yet had any vision of Babylon's destruction, although such visions were to be given to the prophets. So he is cavilling at God, he's complaining at God in ignorance. He's saying, oh, it's not fair that Babylon's going to do this to your people and get away with it. And he's really incensed about this. Yeah, because he hasn't yet come to the bit that says Babylon is going to be judged. And it's rather like small children have this very deep, innate sense of justice and anger at injustice. It's not fair. And most times when they go into a tantrum over it's not fair, it's simply because they do not see the bigger picture. They cannot understand the bigger picture. They simply don't see the bigger picture. And as the child gets older and sees the bigger picture, in whatever the context is, they know. They understand. And that was part of Habakkuk's problem at this point, and it is also part of our problem, that we do not see the full picture. And railing and ranting about the problem of evil and God's supposed injustice is partly because you do not see the full picture, because you are only a man. You are nothing more than human. You are nothing less than human. But you're talking about God, and you cannot elevate yourself to his level, to assume his knowledge. You do not have his knowledge. you see only, as Job came to realize again from engagement with the problem of evil, yeah, that you only see just a few parts of his ways as his glorious train passes by. You see that the clouds are but the dust of his feet as he passes by this earth. And you do not see the bigger picture. And one of the great joys of the kingdom is that then we shall know even as we are known. Then we shall see. But it is the test of faith to accept that in this life I do not have the total complete truth about the universe and life and God and individuals and the hand of God in human history, etc. You do not have it. The ultimate truth is Jesus. Yah saves.